This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, September 19th, 2013. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice.
The KUAF website giveaway is offering passes to the Yonder Mountain String Band's Harvest Music Festival, October 17th through the 19th in Ozark. Performers include Les Claypool's Duo de Twang, Greensky Bluegrass, Justin Town Earl, and others. Workshops, various vendors, and outdoor activities will be offered. The drawing is Friday, October 4th, during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Registration is available at our website, KUAF.com.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, FEMA and the American Red Cross are familiar organizations when it comes to emergency relief. But have you heard of the Mennonite Disaster Team?
We meet the Ozarks Mennonite Team, as well as the brothers behind Two Brothers Canoes, in the latest installment of our Locally Made series.
But first, talks of military strikes against the Syrian government in response to their alleged use of chemical weapons against civilians have largely been supplanted by efforts to confiscate and destroy Bashar al-Assad's alleged chemical arsenal. Republican Senator John Bozeman says he's in favor of international efforts to nonviolently pursue chemical weapons instead of launching military strikes.
In regard to the dialogue with the Russians, dialoguing with Assad, you know, trying to neutralize these weapons, I think all of that is fine. I mean, I think we need to do the very best that we can to do that. And so we'll just have to wait to see how that plays out. Certainly, Putin has not been a very reliable partner in the past, you know, as we've attempted to work with him, but perhaps things will turn out better this time.
An agreement between Secretary of State John Kerry and his Russian counterpart established a timeline last week for the delivery of information about the weapons, allowing inspections and the destruction of all weapons by mid-2014.
The Department of Human Services will continue with plans to send HIV test results of three students in the Pea Ridge School District, despite protests from the Disability Rights Center of Arkansas. The center plans to file a lawsuit against DHS for what they say is a violation of federal law and the privacy of the three students. Tom Massow is director of the Disability Rights Center of Arkansas.
For the state to release the results of the school is not going to provide any additional precautionary measures to the school. You're releasing medical information to those individuals who don't need it. Whether or not somebody is HIV positive is not going to change the way you interact nor provide services or supports to the individuals.
He said this case could have wider implications.
At what point is the state going to require all students throughout the state, whether you have a disability or not, to be tested? Because you could have fights break out in school, you could have somebody get scratched or fall on the playground, and there could be blood. Currently, the schools use universal precautions for these types of injuries.
The three students are all foster children. The Department of Human Services released a statement yesterday saying the agency is required by state law to contribute all known information about the health and safety of children who are in state custody to their school districts.
A new report released by the U.S. Census Bureau shows Arkansas's median income for 2012 is relatively flat compared to the previous year, but is still lower than 2010 numbers. The information, compiled from the 2012 American Community Survey, shows the median income in the state is $40,112, an estimated increase of 1.6% over 2011, but that increase is within the 2.1% margin of error. However, the 2012 median income is down an estimated 8.8% from 2010, a figure that has a margin of error of 3.2%.
An energy-related startup firm at the University of Arkansas Regional Technology Park in Fayetteville is receiving recognition for its work on improving the efficiency of solar cells. Pika Solar has received a 2013 Energy and Clean Technology Award for its patent-pending process, which could improve solar cells' efficiency by 15% and could save average-sized solar panel manufacturers $120 million annually. The award names Pika Solar as one of the 10 most promising companies, selected from a pool of global applicants at the 11th Annual Energy and Clean Technology Venture Forum, held last week in Houston.
Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel has rejected a proposed amendment to the Arkansas Constitution that would allow same-sex marriage in the state. The proposed amendment was rejected based on deficiencies in the proposed ballot title text, and according to the Attorney General's opinion, the ballot title failed to summarize what effect the proposal would have on existing law. In 2004, 75% of Arkansas voters supported an amendment to the state constitution that bars same-sex marriage in the state.
Several area residents have been appointed to state boards and commissions. Governor Mike Beebe announced the appointments yesterday. The list of appointments include Denise Garner of Fayetteville and Sam Seacart of Fort Smith to the Vision 2025 Legislative Commission on the Future of Higher Education, which is a new commission geared toward studying, researching, and brainstorming ways for higher education to transform and positively impact the state by and beyond 2025. The quarterly commission meetings are expected to generate the commission's first progress report no later than November of next year.
Mostly cloudy tonight with showers and thunderstorms likely after 1 a.m. Lows will be around 70 throughout the region. Tomorrow, cloudy, showers and thunderstorms likely. Highs will be around 77. And for Friday night, partly cloudy, slight chance of showers and thunderstorms before 1 a.m. A little bit cooler. As we move toward fall, lows will be between 55 and 61 throughout the KUAF listening area. This is Ozarks at Large. During an emergency, we can count on local police, FEMA, and the Red Cross for help. Among these secular organizations is also the Mennonite Disaster Service, a faith-based agency. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich recently met with an Ozarks Mennonite team. They specialize in search and rescue. She met them at a mock drill in Madison County.
And I mean, guys, it's been a long, hard road to hoe to get this to where we're at, but we, as a team...
Arkansas Forestry Commission Ranger George Stowe Rains conducts closing review with members from the Carroll County Sheriff's Department, its Special Operations Unit, and members from the Carroll, Madison, and Newton County Search and Rescue Team after an eight-hour mock incident command system training at an encampment near Huntsville.
We brief them, give them their task assignment, they go back.
Listening very carefully are six bearded men dressed in dungarees and black suspenders. They comprise the Mennonite Disaster Service Search and Rescue Team of Carroll County. Ted Hostetler, who resides in Green Forest, is local and state team leader.
And I grew up Mennonite, and we are Christians, and believe in the Lord Jesus Christ. And the reason, I might say the reason, I'm going to get off track here, but the reason we are doing search and rescue, it is, for us, it is a mission. It is a division of our church, you could say. And we are our own team, the Mennonites are. George did most of our training, trains with us every month. And now the Tri-County, we are under the umbrella, under the Tri-County search and rescue team. So we are Mennonite Disaster Service search and rescue team.
Hostetler's Mennonite community is made up of 50 or so families. They're mostly farmers, and they operate a private school and church just east of Berryville. The Mennonite Disaster Service draws from 4,000 Mennonite Amish and Brethren in Christ churches and districts across the country. But what sets the Carroll County MDS team apart from the others is that they are the first to combine natural disaster recovery with missing person recovery.
It's very rugged terrain. Our guys are very physically fit. They're equipped with packs, and we have a lot of water. I looked at a map and counted the rivers and the lakes within 50 miles, and there's lots of rivers and lakes, and there is a lot of water searches. So through a grant, we was able to purchase a boat that is suited for the river and also for the lake.
Most recently, this search and rescue team, SAR for short, participated in a five-day multi-agency search on Beaver Lake for a missing free diver, using their underwater imaging sonar to help guide divers in recovering the body. And Ted Hostetler says being a person of faith provides him certain opportunity not available to other emergency workers.
Because of us being a faith-based organization, I can come to a search. I'm not held liable to a sheriff or a county or a government agency. I can go up and put my arms around somebody. I can pray with them. I can talk with them, be emotional support as well as doing physical management of it. So I'm a lot more flexible, I feel, and that's what I like so well about the way our organization works.
MDS is divided into five regions, including Canada, with Arkansas located in Region 3, along with 13 states. Carroll County MDS SAR, formerly in operation since 2009, counts 27 team members who've assisted with dozens of searches over the years, helped in tornado recovery in western Washington County in the Altus-Denning region several years ago. And they've provided relief to residents and emergency workers helping at the Joplin, Missouri disaster.
The way it always is in a tornado, I've been to a lot. I'm Gasville, Arkansas. We were one of the first ones there, and we spent about a week there. It's just, it gives you a helpless feeling because the power of something like that is out of your control. And you know, and to pick up afterwards and help people put their lives together is an awesome work. People's hearts are soft, and they want to accept help, and it's nice if you can help them.
Ted Hostetler says they get no monetary compensation, but the rewards are profound.
The most memorable rescue was in Stone County, Arkansas, over by Mountain View, and a three-year-old boy. He wandered, got out of the house, unstacked up books, and unlocked the door and got out of the house. Very rugged terrain. And wandered off. We got there at 9 o'clock in the evening and set up a command staff, worked all night. It was the next day afternoon when we found that little boy alive. And we're volunteers, and we spend a lot of time, and I always say the paycheck is when a child is found alive. And the look on the mother's face is indescribable.
MDS Executive Director Kevin King says the organization, established in 1950 and based in Lititz, Pennsylvania, is rooted in historical religious mutual aid.
It goes way back to our early Anabaptist faith, where taking the commandment seriously of loving our neighbor, and that neighbor could be across the street or it could be around the world.
MDS operates a unit in every state and Canadian province with more than 6,000 volunteers.
And so the basic responding block might be the congregation in that state. And then as the situation is larger or beyond their capacity, the unit, i.e. the state, reaches out. It's the coordinator, the state unit coordinator, calls people and develop a response. When it's overwhelming, like a large fire such as Bastrop, Texas, or Hurricane Katrina, then it ramps up to a regional nature or to a binational.
The service last count raised nearly $4 million annually. One-third covers administration, with the remainder going to equip volunteers in the field. Kevin King had been up part of the night, with MDS currently deploying units along the Front Range of eastern Colorado, where heavy rains have caused historic flooding. From Hurricane Sandy relief to recent wildfires in Southern California, MDS has been on the scene, but the Carroll County Search and Rescue Team, King says, is novel.
Our strong suit is in early response, meaning cleanup, and then becomes the recovery of 2, 3, 4 years down the road. So search and rescue is cutting edge for MDS. I approve of it, I applaud it, and I'm very excited for this group of folks. To use whatever the strongest gifts God has given them, and they've done that. And we're very pleased with them and bless them for that. We're really excited.
An Arkansas emergency response trainer, George Stowrain, says the Mennonite Disaster Service is now embedded in their emergency response system.
And if it wasn't for the Mennonites, we wouldn't have a SAR team. And not to discount the other people that are involved, but the Mennonites, when we show up, they're always there in good numbers. They learn so well. They are so organized, so disciplined, and they're the best search and rescue team in the United States. I would put them up against anybody. And they are the cohesive part of this group because they help remind us that there's no good egos. There's no good hostile intentions. They keep us focused. They keep us mellow. And it just, the spiritual content that they bring to the team is unbelievable.
Searching the Ozarks Outback, as you can imagine, is grueling, and on occasion the results heartbreaking. So once a month, the Mennonite, along with their county emergency manager brethren, meet to share best management practices and camaraderie. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more about the Mennonite Disaster Service and to make a contribution, visit mdsmennonite.net.
Here's an innovative approach to fighting world hunger.
So what we have here is cooked, dehydrated insect larvae. And they kind of taste like a savory cracker without salt. They're not bad.
It's not for human consumption, but it could be a useful source of animal feed. That story later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered can be heard this afternoon from 3 to 6 on 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Tonight on the University of Arkansas campus, author and media critic Jack G. Shaheen will present American Images of the Middle East, Problems and Prospects. It takes place at 7 in Giffel's Auditorium inside Old Main on the U of A campus. Last night, there was a screening and discussion of his documentary, Real Bad Arabs. Real as in R-E-E-L, as in the movie portrayals of Arabs in American movies. This morning, I talked to him inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio and asked him about his research that has resulted in both the documentary and books about portrayals of Arabs. And he told me that there is a pattern that's developed over decades.
Anytime you have a stereotype, you have to have fixed images that don't change of any group. And with Arabs, just like with Native Americans, Asians, Jews, if you're going to vilify them, you take the same images and you repeat them over and over again, not only in the cinema, but on television shows, in comic books, you name it, toys and games. So you take the sheikh, you know, the sort of oversexed sheikh with too much money, the Bedouin bandit, the terrorist, the boisterous bargainer in the souk who says, I give you a good price, and then he raises it several hundred dollars to try and cheat you. And then with women, the same thing. They're either buxom belly dancers that no one wants. They're clad in black from head to toe. I call them bundles in black. They're terrorists, or they're submissive. And normally they don't speak. They're mute. And so you combine those, you set it in sort of a primitive environment, namely the desert.
Mm-hmm.
You exclude family, because if they have children and if they're happily married, you can't vilify them. And what's interesting about this formula, I mean, Goebbels said it years ago back in the 30s, in order for this to be effective, you repeat the same images over and over and over again. And what I found in watching those nearly 1,200 films, the second edition, I found even more. I keep finding them, unfortunately, and they're there. There's very little variation.
It starts actually before, but Rudolf Valentino.
Right, even before Valentino.
Even before that.
Yes. Yes, I mean, I think, you know, in the early days, we sort of vilified anyone that wasn't Lily White. Right. We picked on the Asian, you know, the black, the Hispanic. I mean, they were all foreigners. Mm-hmm. We just sort of went after them. And then gradually, as we began to unlearn our prejudices of those other groups, you know, the civil rights movement, the incarceration of Japanese Americans, the Holocaust with Jews. I mean, all of these things, we became aware that cowboy and Indian films were no longer acceptable, although we still couldn't cast a Native American as Tonto. You know, it had to be
Johnny Depp. Yeah.
So I boycotted the film.
Well, you and just about the entire
and good for us, you know. And these things, but what happened is as we began to sort of grow up, we stuck with this image of Arabs and Muslims, and then we began to embellish it. And it's been with us now for more than a century, and it doesn't seem, actually in many ways, it's gotten worse, because now it's not so much the wealthy sheikh, it is primarily the image of the terrorist. And of course, events, you know, 9/11, the Boston bombing, Major Hassan down in Texas. We've taken these events. I think they're special interest groups like the Clarion Fund and people like Daniel Pipes and Daniel Horowitz. You know, they have a political agenda. You can vilify a Muslim or an Arab, even an American Muslim or an American Arab, if you're running for public office and get money.
You mention events, and you actually, you know, go back to the mid-70s and the oil embargo. And,
right.
And the movie Network.
Yes.
An Oscar winner.
Yes.
You know, I hadn't seen that movie in a couple of decades, and then there's a clip in the documentary. I had forgotten that Peter Finch's character, Howard...
Beale.
One of his big rants to get people angry is to yell at Arabs and Saudi Arabians buying up America.
Right. Not only that, everyone says stop it and that sale does not go through. What's interesting is Chayefsky, if you do any research on Chayefsky's feelings about Arabs,
and he was
understand.
The screenwriter.
Yeah, he won an Academy Award for best screenplay.
Yeah.
I mean, he won an Academy Award for that. Of course, it's a terrific comment, as I say in the documentary. It's one of my favorite films, except, and that's a major exception, the ranting against Arabs. It's not against anyone else except Arabs.
And that's interesting because it's one thing if you see a movie like Harum Scarum,
right.
which you don't take seriously, or The Happy Hooker Goes to Washington.
Yes.
I mean,
these
you
are light.
Don't expect.
No.
But to see then Network.
A major.
Or perhaps one of the most egregious examples is Father of the Bride 2
yes.
with Steve Martin.
Right.
I think it's Eugene Levy.
Yes.
The comic actor plays a wealthy.
Mr. Habib.
And it's offensive.
Yeah, it's Disney.
It's minstrel.
Yeah, it's Disney. Disney has a horrific track record when it comes to the vilification of Arabs.
I'm not trying to make you connect dots with a line that doesn't exist, so you can just dismiss this if you want. But this past weekend, a woman born in Syracuse, New York, won Miss America.
Right.
She happened to have Indian heritage.
Right.
I don't know if you saw some of the comments that were on Twitter of people from around the country who showed incredible ignorance towards culture and geography, but there were some horrible things said, as if she was Muslim, and as if that would be wrong that she was Miss America. I mean, these Hollywood vilifications have not helped people understand people of different cultures, have they?
No, and we need more of it, and I think it's coming. There have been some great Hollywood films that have helped. I can't think of the one with Denzel Washington who marries a girl from India. It goes way, way, way back. That was absolutely brilliant. But it was back in the 80s, I think. And I'm sorry I can't come up with the title. But it's also, I think, there is a lack of what I would... There is. I don't know the people who tweeted, okay? I just think there are certain Americans, unfortunately, for better or worse, that are prejudiced against anyone, a person of color. And they don't distinguish. You know, India, you know, you're black, you're Indian, you're Arab, you're Sikh. I mean, the first victims after 9/11 were Sikhs, you know, perceived as Arabs. And I think what's so sad is that what should have happened after that is there should have been some strong rhetoric. There should have been some very strong rhetoric addressing this. I mean, if I were with a major network, I'd have done a segment on it. Not a soundbite, a segment. But, you know, where is news today? It's sad. I mean, that's a terrific story. And it's still viable. And I think it's extremely important. I was not surprised. When I, 2 years ago, when Turner Classic Movies asked me to do this series on Arab images in the cinema, we did about 36 films during the month of July. There were individuals that had an agenda that went after me on TCM website. I couldn't look at it anymore. Some of the most hateful things you could ever imagine. Fortunately, the people at TCM dismissed it. They said, well, we know about these people. And they looked at the entire picture, you know. But I couldn't, you know, they would write, and Shaheen's coming on tonight, and blickety-blank, blickety-blank, that blickety-blank. And then a film scholar in Washington, D.C. writes to me, you're not sympathetic toward Muslims, are you? You know, this is a first-rate scholar. I'm first-rate in every way. So I think the fact that we have failed to acknowledge vocally these prejudices, these built-in prejudices, permits this kind of thing to happen to Miss America and others of people of color. And until such time that we can get our act together and start speaking out, in a, not in an angry way, but in a normal sort of rational manner, and not where people are shouting on one another like on Fox and CNN, you know, who shouts the loudest makes their point clear. We have to have a good discussion about it.
That is Jack G. Shaheen. He is the author of several books, including Nuclear War Films, Arab and Muslim Stereotyping in American Popular Culture, The TV Arab, and his book Real Bad Arabs, How Hollywood Vilifies a People. He's also the subject of a documentary called Real Bad Arabs. Again, that's spelled R-E-E-L. There will be a longer conversation with him next month on Ozarks at Large when he talks about why he is optimistic that the portrayals might change. And by the way, he will be presenting a lecture tonight, American Images of the Middle East, Problems and Prospects. That's 7 o'clock tonight in Giffel's Auditorium in Old Main on the University of Arkansas campus. It's free and open to the public. I talked with him earlier this morning inside the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio at KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. KUAF is supported by Cisco Funeral Chapel. With roots in Northwest Arkansas since 1915, Cisco offers a variety of funeral services, including pre-arrangement and life insurance policies. More information, commonly asked questions, healing resources, and honor a veteran information available online at CiscoFuneral.com.
In just a few minutes, we talk with some local residents who have rented or are renting their homes out for bikes, blues, and barbecue, and those tax implications of that income earned. But first, Arvest Bank and Loaves and Fishes are holding a Skip Your Lunch, Give a Meal fundraiser tomorrow from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. The event will benefit Arvest's 1 Million Meals initiative. Instead of going out to lunch, they're asking that you visit your local Arvest Bank during your lunch break to donate money typically spent on lunch.
So that's tomorrow.
Yes.
Community Clinic Siloam Springs on Saturday will invite friends and supporters for an evening of entertainment to raise funds to provide access to health care for low-income residents. The annual event is called Saving the Community One Patient at a Time. It's Saturday night at 6 at Cypress Barn in Siloam Springs. In the past year, the clinic says 2,500 patients made Community Clinic Siloam Springs their medical home, providing primary and preventative services and helping patients improve their health care outcomes, decrease their health care costs, as well as the need for avoidable, costlier care. Support from the community allows Community Clinic to remain a health care safety net for low-income and uninsured neighbors. There is a $75 ticket price for this fundraiser, but all proceeds do go to the Community Clinic Siloam Springs Medical Clinic. Music provided by the Sons of Otis Malone. If you want to know more, you can email siloam at communityclinicnwa.org.
The University of Arkansas School of Law will conduct free walk-in clinics for Northwest Arkansas homeowners who are facing possible foreclosure. The clinics will be held at the Fayetteville Public Library beginning September 26 and continuing through November. University of Arkansas law students and a supervising attorney will be available to provide answers to questions the homeowners have about Arkansas foreclosure law and pending issues with their home mortgage, including possible options for loan modifications or short sales. The free clinics are made possible with the support of a grant from the Arkansas Attorney General's Office and are part of the National Mortgage Settlement. Additional information about this program can be found at law.uark.edu/clinic/foreclosure.
I think we'll put that on the webpage.
Yeah, it's kind
that's
of
a
mouthful,
long one to remember. Yes.
But I bet you could get to it if you just went to law.uark.edu.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You can find it. Actually, we also have the link on yesterday's webpage. Should we forget to put it up there today?
Okay.
Saturday, as I mentioned yesterday, is College Day at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, but they also have an art talk going on. It is titled Looking Closely at Dennis Miller Bunker's Anne Page. Museum educator Amanda Driver will lead a slow art exploration of Bunker's life and short-lived career, his painting styles, and his captivating sitter. That's tomorrow, or Saturday, I should say,
Saturday.
From 3:30 to 4:15 in the late 19th century art area of the museum. Best news, it's free and it's open to the public.
The inaugural Bacon Bowl, presented by Pettygene Meats, will take place on the grounds of the Northwest Arkansas Mall in Fayetteville from 11 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. That's Saturday, October 26th. The Bacon Bowl will feature competitors testing their culinary skills in creating the best bacon dishes, featuring Arkansas's own Pettygene Meats bacon. Who doesn't like bacon?
Well, I think there's some
people. There's some people?
Yeah.
Oh, well. All right.
I venture to say probably everyone likes the taste, but some people for different reasons won't eat bacon.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
All right.
Teams can choose to enter entree or dessert divisions or both. Teams will be divided into amateur and professional divisions, and winners will receive cash and prizes. For more information, go to baconbowl.net.
And the Walton Arts Center is seeking proposals from visual and performing artists to be part of the 2014 Artisphere Festival that will take place in the spring of next year. The 2014 Artisphere Partner Grant Program has a total of $20,000 to be awarded between one up to five grant winners, at least one up to five. The goal is to find work that supports the mission and theme of Artisphere and engages the community. Deadline for the submission approaching. It's November 1st. At 11:59 p.m. So if you're a procrastinator, you can wait till almost midnight,
right?
November 2nd. The award announcement will be made December 1st. If you'd like more information on the application criteria, and it's wide open. They are really looking for different sort
of... You can do anything.
Right. You can visit artisphearfestival.org. They have all the information there.
What do stories tell us about who we are?
We all want affirmations that our lives have meaning. And nothing does a greater affirmation than when we connect through stories. It can cross the barriers of time and allow us to experience the similarities between ourselves and through others, real and imagined.
I'm Guy Raz, framing the story. That's on the next TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Listen Sunday at noon to KUAF 91.3 FM.
With two Razorback home games under our belts, four more to go, and the hum and roar of motorcycles growing louder today in Fayetteville for Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue, Northwest Arkansas has and will experience quite the influx of visitors. Local hotels tend to fill up rather quickly, and in recent years, renting out one's own home has become quite popular. Sandy Prince rented her home for Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue 5 or 6 years ago. She said it wasn't something she'd really planned on.
It was kind of a fluke. A friend of mine, Susan Gessler, had done it. And I thought, well, if she can do it, I can do it. Why not? I had a project that I wanted some funding for. I had a house with 3 acres on Mission Boulevard in the middle of the woods. And I wanted some grass and some different landscaping. It was going to be quite a project. And my husband said, well, you'll have to just get a part-time job. And I thought, I'll get you a part-time job. I'll rent out the house for Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue. And he thought I was kidding. So I went to the website.
The website she is referring to is the Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue event site, which offers a section on lodging to suggest and connect the upwards of 100,000 attendees to a place to stay. Prince, with a bit of an empty nest syndrome, posted pictures of her 6-bedroom home, advertised that it was 3 miles from Dixon Street with a place to store bikes and $150 per bedroom per night.
I got a pediatrician and her husband from somewhere in Missouri, a rancher and his wife from Colorado, another couple from Missouri, and some of them came in on Wednesday, and, you know, we advertised breakfast will be cooked for you, and that was my husband's job, was to get up and cook breakfast.
She says it was like inviting friends into their home, but when asked if she would do it again, Sandy says it was an awful lot of work.
To think about all the sheets and all the towels and all of those things, you know, hair dryers, which I had already done. I sort of made an initial commitment, invested very nice linens, very nice bed pillows. I had 5 bathrooms to contend with, so I tried to stock them. But football season's very busy with my friends from East Arkansas, so I hardly ever would have the opportunity to do that for football season. But the thought did cross my mind.
Sandy Prince says she had so much fun that she even looked into turning her home into a bed and breakfast. But the workload and driveway logistics kept her from it.
I think I would have done it again, but, you know, I had to turn the income in to the accountant. You know, we did have other rental properties at the time, so there was a way to report that. But again, I have a full-time job, and it's a lot of work. And somebody's got to be there to cook breakfast. If you're going to say bed and breakfast for rent, you know, room for rent, bed and breakfast, you got to cook.
She has since sold that property and moved into a much smaller home. She mentioned the accountant. So what are the requirements for claiming income made from renting out a personal home? Jalen Thomas is a CPA and instructor and assistant department chair for the accounting department at the Sam M. Walton College of Business at the University of Arkansas. She says this is a common practice and there is some good news in the income reporting requirements.
Actually, you can earn some tax-free income. There's a couple of caveats that you need to know about. First of all, you need to use your home for 15 days out of the year so it can be qualified as a residence. And if you rent your home out for 14 days or less, then you can actually exclude the full amount of rental income that you receive. So essentially that's tax-free income.
But if the income is excluded, no expenses directly associated with the rental can be deducted.
Also, this does not affect the deductibility that you have on your own return as far as being able to deduct property taxes or mortgage interest if you itemize deductions. This doesn't affect that at all. So it's a good deal.
Thomas says that keeping good records is key. Colby and Juliana Salazar, a young couple with a two-bedroom house off of Township in Fayetteville, have turned their home rental into a bit of a business, renting out their personal house for every home game and Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue this year and last.
We realize we're in a unique situation, being that we're young, we don't have kids yet, we have friends and family that actually live in the area, so we can go away for the weekend and have a place to stay. But so we get the place cleaned up, you know, top to bottom before our renters come in. And our experience has been when we return back to the home, it's usually just as clean as when we left it. So it's like we're getting paid to have our house cleaned, almost in a weird kind of way. So yeah, it's been a good experience that we get to come home to a clean house almost.
I think people are coming to town for a specific reason. They're not coming to hang out at the house. So people are out and about. They're here for the game or Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue or whatever, you know, university usually is what brings people in. And so when we come back, we find that they've been doing that. They haven't even been living here hardly. So we've had a really good success.
Juliana says that bang for your buck is part of the appeal for renters. Hotel rates close to downtown Fayetteville can be rather pricey, even for just one room. The Salazar's rate for their home starts at $350 per night for two bedrooms, an entire house, and a garage.
I think that it's just easier. You know, we have some families that will come up even from Little Rock that we've gotten to know. Their kids go to school here, and they like having a place where they can make their kids dinner and do their laundry. And it offers a lot more comfort than just grabbing rooms for everybody. And you have your own parking. You put your car in a garage.
Or motorcycles.
Or you put your motorcycles in the garage.
That's a big deal. When someone has trailered an expensive or custom bike in for Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue, a garage offers more security than a hotel parking lot. As for security, unlike Sandy Prince, the Salazars go to great lengths to secure their valuables and depersonalize their home.
We put a deadbolt on a closet so that we can kind of put some things away and depersonalize the home. We've framed just pictures of the Ozark Mountains and Old Main and things like that that are representative of Fayetteville, so people don't have to look at our wedding photos and things like that when they come over. So we put some of that away and out of sight. And then VRBO is how we rent out our property. And they offer a lot of protection as far as, you know, collecting information and payment.
That's VRBO.com, which stands for Vacation Rental by Owner. The organization does most of the management, charging homeowners an annual fee. Users can search by location, home size, number of bedrooms, and so on. The couple had used it in their own travels and decided to give it a shot.
I guess we put a lot of trust and faith in our renters that they won't rob us blind and us come home to an empty house, but we've had a great experience so far with it. So
they even go so far as to have guest linens for their renters, a cost they can deduct on their taxes. Both in real estate themselves, the Salazars see themselves continuing to rent out their home as long as their current situation, young, childless, and in a smallish house, continues. This is Ozarks at Large.
Once a month, we find a spot in our area where ingenuity or entrepreneurship or both has taken root. Our locally made series highlights people creating all manner of objects. And this week, that hunt for locally made objects took us to rural Benton County, outside of Avoca, to meet one of the two siblings behind the company Two Brothers Canoe Incorporated. Generally, people buy canoes to get away from the noise of the city. Well, just getting to the shop where Two Brothers Canoes are created takes you away from the noise already.
Yeah, we're in the sticks a little bit. And, you know, you see the sign up front on the road? That just went up today.
The sign Lewis Shaw is talking about is for the dirt road that leads to his shop. His neighbors began a petition to have the road officially called Canoe Lane. Lewis grew up not far from here, about 5 miles as the crow flies, around Prairie Creek. And he grew up fishing, floating, and boating on area rivers and lakes. But he didn't grow up thinking he wanted to make the canoes he used. That came years later. His older brother Bill, who lives in Missouri and is in the manufacturing business, was the first to get the idea. So in hindsight, the development of Two Brothers Canoe seems to make sense. You take one brother.
I've always loved canoeing and being on the rivers around here.
Plus another brother.
My brother has been in the production and manufacturing for 20 plus years, and he had a fiberglass company.
And voila, you have a small canoe manufacturing business. Well, not quite. Lewis says a few years ago at a family gathering, his older brother asked him a question seemingly out of the blue.
I was talking about a canoe trip. I just went on a spring, lots of water, and he kind of came up to me after I was done with my story and said, "Hey, you want to make canoes?" I'm like, "Make canoes?" He's like, "Yeah, we can make canoes." I'm like, "Well, sure."
A bit later, Lewis says he was writing a check for some heavy equipment, and he realized, hey, he was in the canoe business, or at least would be soon. His shop is in a spot that is about as isolated as you can be in a growing Benton County. Directions to the shop include the instruction to turn left at the crushed culvert. But his shop is filled with high-tech machinery. Each canoe begins as a flat piece of plastic, shipped to Lewis in cardboard.
This is the material, and this is the Royal X. And as you see, all the colors are fused together, and that's done by a vulcanization process. So basically, they take all the layers, put them where they need to be, put these little strips in, and then they vulcanize it, which basically seals all the layers together.
He says these thin strips of colored material have a type of foam inside them. When the plastic is heated up, that foam makes the plastic expand and grow, both in length and width. That heating process happens in Lewis's shop in an oven that really looks no different than something you'd see at a pizzeria.
So what you're looking at here is about 20 foot length in the oven, and it's about 5.5 or so feet wide. This tray actually rolls in and out. And so we put the plastic on the rack, and then when it's done doing its thing, we pull it out.
Pull it out with welder's gloves, since the now larger sheet of plastic is about 300 degrees. It's a two-person operation to slide the canoe in progress from the oven onto a molding table. Lewis and his brother Bill schedule certain days when they can both be at the shop to build the canoes. What happens next has to take place in about a minute's time because the plastic is cooling rapidly and after about 60 seconds will be impossible to mold. A large single piece of metal, the mold, is raised. Plastic is fitted over two fixtures Lewis calls his helpers. They resemble a person's knee. They've been warmed with a propane torch so they can help the hot material keep its heat for a few seconds longer. After securing the sheet with some metal clamps, and the clock is still ticking, the mold is lowered.
So we come back down, we put that in place, and then it's basically held in position. The mold, at this point, my brother and I kind of have our jobs that we do. Goes back down, and as you can see this line all over on the tabletop, that's where the plastic gets pinched all out along the edge.
What happens next is a mixture of vacuum pressure and hands-on work to form the basic shell of what will be a canoe. After a cooling period, excess plastic is trimmed with a router. Later, benches, seats, and other features will be added by hand, each canoe attended to individually. Most of this later work can be done by Lewis in his shop by himself, though his canine companions, Lily and Casey, sometimes provide moral support. Business has been good for Two Brothers Canoe, a testament perhaps to the quality of their product. Most of the business, Lewis says, has come from word of mouth and Facebook. He's had the opportunity to see his canoes float by him on a river. And during our visit, he was finishing a canoe for a customer in Little Rock and already thinking about beginning work on another for a customer who had called from Jonesboro. For a business Lewis didn't think about until a random conversation with his older brother, things are going pretty well. He says most members of his family and most of his friends have been impressed.
You know, I think everybody was real supportive. You know, I've always kind of been a dreamer. So I think a lot of people said, yeah, Lewis is the next harebrained idea, you know. So I think it took a little bit for people to take us serious.
Slowly, the brothers are building a reputation and getting some recognition for their canoes. And Lewis is working in a field he's always loved. When asked a common question, what advice would you give others contemplating beginning their own business? He says he wanted to avoid a cliched answer.
Just follow your dreams and your passions. But, you know, I really think life is about finding happiness, you know, and the things that you enjoy that you could, now talking business sense, that you could turn into a business, you know, it makes it a lot easier to do something when you really, truly enjoy it. So follow your dreams, I guess, you know. But I didn't want to be that cliche answer, but there is a lot of truth to that.
Lewis Shaw is one of the two brothers of Two Brothers Canoe Incorporated, and we talked to him at his shop outside of Avoca, not too far from the left turn at the Crush Culvert, earlier this week. You can learn more at the Two Brothers Canoe Facebook page or at their website, twobrotherscanoe.com. It is Thursday, September 19th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
We are going to talk about something that has nothing to do with Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue.
Ooh.
Not that we have anything against Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue, but...
But you're going to hear it everywhere.
Exactly.
So we're going to talk about, this sounds like I made this up, the American Girl Fashion Show.
Well,
that's
completely different.
Pretty good juxtaposition.
Yeah, that's completely different. This happens October 5th and 6th, but you need to plan ahead so you can take your little people. It happens at the Art Center of the Ozarks. The American Girl Company lets one nonprofit in each state do a fashion show.
As a fundraiser.
And ACO has been that nonprofit for 4 or 5 years now, maybe more. I can't keep track of time terribly well. But it's interesting to think about all the things that come out of the show. Michelle Cook is the chairwoman, and she says you get all these great benefits. You get multiple generations talking about history. Mm-hmm. You know, Granny, was your life really like that? You get people talking about the Art Center at the Ozarks who might never have gone otherwise. And you get kids who want to grow up to act or to do other things at the Art Center.
Now, the American Girl, this is a line of dolls, right? And each one is a different character.
Over periods of the past.
Right.
So you might have a Civil War doll and a 1940s doll.
And there have...
Samantha was the, I believe, the main, the kind of original.
And wasn't there a movie several years ago?
There are movies.
With and one of the young women is like a reporter.
Mm-hmm.
Kip or Kim or...
Kip.
Kit,
I think.
Something.
Kit.
Yeah, they all have a story.
You're right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Just wanted to, yes.
And little girls love them, and moms love them, and grandmas love them. And it's a great opportunity for everybody to go and see the fashion show, which is local girls. And then they have sort of a tea party in the ACO lobby.
Sounds like fun.
There are four shows, 12:30 and 4 on Saturday and Sunday, the 5th and the 6th. Tickets are $35. That includes the tea party. And you can find out more at 751-5441 if you heard any of this.
Thank you, Becca.
Becca Martin-Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
The KUAF website giveaway is offering a pair of season tickets to the 2013 Walton Art Center's 10x10 Art Series. One winner will receive a pair of tickets to each of the 10 shows. Performances include Onda Union, Los Angeles Guitar Quartet, Chucha Valdez, and more. The drawing will be held Friday, September 27th, during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Registration and information available at KUAF.com. KUAF is supported by Arcom Printing, located on the hillside just east of the Township and College intersection in Fayetteville.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Westville, Oklahoma.
Okay, just over the border.
Just over the border.
Mm-hmm. I was expecting you to say Avoca.
I did that yesterday.
You did do that.
Yes. So, which I went to, of course, for the conversation with Lewis Shaw. One other thing I wanted to say about Two Brothers Canoe that I couldn't fit into the story, just a fun little fact. They have this great logo, which is two folks in a canoe paddling against either a sunrise or a sunset. And I asked Lewis when I was at his shop, said, you know, did you do the logo? Did your brother? He actually held a contest on the web and asked people to submit a logo. And they would pick the winner, which they did. And it was created by a gentleman who lives in the Philippines.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's far, yeah, pretty
yeah.
far away.
So that is a Filipino-created logo for Two Brothers Canoe Incorporated oh. in Avoca.
Well, there you go.
And thanks, Lewis, once again for your hospitality out there.
And if you have an idea for our monthly locally made series, you can email us at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
And the only criteria we're really looking for is it made here.
Right. Anywhere
Anything.
In our listening area
right.
or close to
yeah.
it.
Let us know. ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. Tomorrow on the program, it's Friday, so most Fridays we have music inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. Tomorrow, no different.
Corey Montgomery joined Katie Henriksen mm-hmm. recently, and he's a blues guy. So
yeah.
in honor of Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue.
There you go. We've got yep. him. And we'll also have our usual conversation with Michael Tilley from thecitywire.com about the week's news events. And Monday on the program that you're hosting.
Yes,
that
yes.
That you're producing. Part of my conversation with two of the authors from the updated second edition of Arkansas, A Narrative History. This is a book that tries to take the history of Arkansas and make it not a textbook, not an academic journal, but sort of a story, obviously based in fact, not based in fact, with facts in history. And just to give you an idea of what we're talking about, it starts on page 3 with Pangaea, right? So it
okay.
starts with the forming of what would eventually become the land that becomes Arkansas, and it ends on like page 497 with the discussion about fracking.
Okay, so we're covering I mean, everything.
Well, yes.
Beginning to now.
Right. Civil War is in there. The Louisiana Purchase. Anything that affected Arkansas. And so Jeannie Wayne and George Sabo, both faculty members at the University of Arkansas, talked to me. Portion of that conversation will be on Monday's edition of Ozarks at Large.
Also on Monday, our Ozarks at Large insect expert, Dr. Don Steinkraus, will
yes.
be joining me. And we'll be talking about meal moths and other kind of kitchen pests.
Yeah. Visitors.
Yeah, visitors.
Depending
yeah.
on how you... Hey, and it is Mike's Blues and Barbecue. There's no avoiding it if you live in Fayetteville or the surrounding area. There are many bikes. I was on Dixon Street last night, and it was really beginning to build on the first night. There was already live music out there. A lot of people. It's mellow and loud at the same time, if that's a possibility.
Well, I was there early afternoon. I actually walked from the station up to campus for another story, and... It was pretty quiet yesterday afternoon. There was still some sound, and I went ahead and
like
recorded
that.
Yes.
That we just heard? Yeah.
Just like that. So we don't even need to hear my sound.
That's right. But here is what you recorded. I want to remind people that there's a lot of music with Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue, including tonight from 7:10 to 9, our friend of the show, R.J. Michaud, one of the world's greatest blues harpists, and Samantha Fish, who is on the program Wednesday, will be at the main stage at the Dixon Street Beer Garden as well tonight. That all, well, the music has been going on through the afternoon, but it will go up till midnight.
Right. A production of KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Antoinette Grajeda will join me tomorrow at noon for a brand new edition. You and I together Sunday morning for Weekend Ozarks at Large.
Until then, thanks for listening.